Good morning, happy Friday, and welcome to Fuzzy Logic, episode 12. We are talking about digital privacy and if it still exists or if it ever did exist, but in general about privacy and how it gets at us as creators and business people and brands. Welcome to Fuzzy Logic.
Welcome to Fuzzy Logic, the podcast that explores the crucial legal, ethical, and social components of creator content, hosted by the brilliant Gordon Firemark, the inspiring Elsie Escobar, and moderated by the talented Trevor Tomian. Our goal is to equip you with the knowledge and resources you need to make informed decisions and create content that resonates with your audience. Join us for an exciting and enlightening conversation that tackles the critical issues facing creators today. Explore the intersection of law, ethics, and social responsibility with Fuzzy Logic.
As always, shout out to Bree for that amazing intro. I love that intro. It's so cool with the music. Welcome, Gordon Firemark, the podcast lawyer, and Elsie Escobar, the podcast pundit. We have the podcast leaders here today. How y'all doing?
Pretty good. Thank you so much.
Doing great. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. That day, no doubt. I want to jump right into today so we can set a foundation. So I put a question out earlier this week just to try to understand and build us some concrete underneath us. Because when we talk digital privacy, it's a lot of unknowns. It's a lot of secrets to a lot of people. There's only a few people in the world that seem to really understand this stuff on some days. But the question that I threw out to everyone, and I'd love us to start there, is have you ever thought about or looked back upon a season of your life or a specific time in your life, whether it be work or home, where you thought somebody might have gone through your stuff, like your actual physical papers on your desk, your mail in your mailbox? Like back in the day, it was fun to hack people's Facebooks, and then it got creepy eventually, like when they left their phone out. I wondered if Elsie, thrown it to you first, if you have been, I guess, either a victim of somebody going through your actual stuff or a thought to yourself, I think somebody went through my stuff, but I'm not really sure.
I don't think that I had that, in all honesty. I don't think that I really had anybody like go through my stuff. I mean, I guess. I mean, there could have been some times. I've always been extra private about my things. And so I think that I was always aware of putting things away. I would assume, I'm shout out mom. She might have gone through my things and never told me. And she was really good about not letting me know that she did that, because she never actually came up to me and said, like, look at what I found, you know, like that never really happened. So I'll pass it off to you, Gordon. Maybe you were found out.
Well, in my personal life, there was one time when, you know, my then fiance, now wife, sat down at my computer and opened it up and asked me some hard questions about stuff that was on the screen there. But it was, you know, nothing big, but it was just sort of, you know, oh, why were you looking at my computer? I sat down and needed to get something, you know, whatever. But I don't think anybody has, with any malice, ever done that in my personal life. However, early in my career, I was working in a litigation law firm, and we were doing a big case against a bunch of big companies and high profile people. And we regularly had the office swept for bugs and found them many times, a couple of times. And so they were listening in on our conversations and our planning of strategy and those kinds. Someone was listening in. We were never able to prove who it was, but it was sort of, the timing seemed pretty obvious where it was coming from. And so, you know, as lawyers, we have the attorney-client privilege and confidentiality concerns and all those kinds of things. That's a big deal. And it has, from that experience, I've learned, you know, to be very careful about where I put my stuff and who might get access and things like that.
Yeah, for sure. It was kind of where my mind went first when I thought about how we set, you know, we always talk about how we set the foundation going into the conversations we go into. And with, when we're talking technology, I think it's nice to be able to set it in something that's tangible, something we've done before, something we understand, like in a physical way. Because as we transition to talking about the digital side of things, the phone side of things, the internet, you know, like the internet side of things, the app side of things, and the conversations that do exist around any level of digital privacy, it's again, like we talk about, it's a unique time in history. You know, mm-hmm. before you would have had so much more understanding if somebody had moved a thing. You could have at least wondered to yourself,
yeah.
or you might have heard somebody like listening at the door or saw when you're a kid and you like peek through the keyhole, like in the movies kind of thing. Like you had all those different mechanisms that were very more likely to know when that's happening.
Sure.
And of course, you know, the big thing I think that we all felt coming into this was, yeah, there's times that it's good to look through the keyhole because sometimes the stuff that's going down behind closed doors is not super cool. And that really is what brought, I think, this conversation to a head in terms of importance for us was looking at it that way. It's like there are going to be some positives to being able yeah. to know what's going on behind closed doors and where does that end? So I guess per normal, Gordon, from a legal standpoint, can you build us a little bit of a framing around what exists now around privacy, specifically in the digital world? Because we know that some of it's for paper, but we think yeah. I also think that focusing in on the interwebs is really important for this one.
Well, you know, privacy has so many different layers. It's sort of, you know, like peeling back an onion. I mean, there are the kinds of privacy that we used to talk about, invasion of privacy, meaning somebody crowding into your space, you know, coming into your seclusion and solitude, and that is still a kind of privacy. That, and when people bring recording or camera devices and things like that into your space, that can be a real offense. And you know, when we put it to juries, the question is it highly offensive to a reasonable person when they've done that kind of thing? And that's sort of how we determine it. But there's also the kinds of privacy where they're just revealing publicly, making, you know, revealing information about you, revealing false or, you know, creating misleading impressions about you. There's when someone uses your name or likeness without your permission. That's a kind of privacy violation as well. Using your stuff and perhaps projecting something that you don't want. There was a case just recently about a football player, Tom Brady. There, some podcasters actually went and created a stand-up comedy routine using mm-hmm. an AI-generated animated Tom Brady. And of course, his team came after them pretty hard, pretty quickly, and they took it down. But, you know, that's an example of where the technology is making this stuff different and more possible and whatever. But, you know, the law has those kinds of protections. There's also data privacy, and there are lots of strong laws about making it illegal and a crime to, you know, break into a secured computer system and those kinds of things. Mm. And then we get into the... you know, once upon a time, if you had naked photos or videos of you having sex or things like that, that stayed very close to home and
right.
in a very private, hopefully, situation. Nowadays, we, you know, we carry it around with us on our phones and think, well, not that I have any of that stuff out there, but, you know, people carry that stuff around on their phones. And, you know, let's face it, there's a motivation for hackers to get a hold of that stuff, especially if you're a celebrity or a public figure of some sort, where it may just be about embarrassing you or discrediting you or those kinds of things. And while it's illegal, the technology has made it, I won't say easy to do that, but certainly possible. Yeah, or politician is another, yeah, public figures that are in the spotlight for one reason or another. So, you know, the law is there and it is trying to do its thing. With respect to data collection, the laws are constantly in motion. The U.S. seems to be trailing the EU on this a bit in terms of what is allowed to be collected about whom, about minors in particular, those kinds of things. But we're catching up. We're doing our thing. California has a pretty strong privacy law for at least for larger companies that are doing online data collection. And I think a few other states are starting to implement similar things. So it's a work in progress.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. I appreciate you setting kind of that foundation there. Sure. As we switch over kind of the more social cultural side of things, Elsie, I hear what Gordon is saying with the policies and things that are constantly evolving. And it sort of sparked a question in my head that I kind of throw your way first. But in terms of what you see for us as independent podcasters and creators, do you think that the current privacy environment has been helpful to small businesses and small creators, or generally hurtful to small creators and the business that we're in? Because I wonder if it boosts advertising enough that you would justify it, or if it's still too invasive for it to be really truly helpful to the average creator.
Yeah, I'm not sure what you mean in terms of that. Can you clarify a little bit more what you mean?
Yeah, so when we look across like the landscape of where we think we are in time, right? Because that's always like tough until you have time to look back on retrospect in a moment. But the time we are, I guess, just in the progression of understanding digital privacy and enacting oversight for it and having it built into some of our businesses, do you think that it's serving us well, or do you think it's generally serving some other maybe less good cause, I guess, when we think of ourselves specifically as creators or representatives as creators?
Yeah, I think I got the gist of that question. I can tell you that, you know, when I first, because I've been doing online creation for such a long time, right? When I first got into it, the element of privacy wasn't even part of what I was doing, right? I was just recording myself. I was creating videos. I was putting things out. I wanted people to find me, right? When I first started, I was a yoga instructor. I was working primarily in LA, and I wanted people to come to my physical classes and come to my studios and do my, that was the, essentially one of the reasons why I did it. And yeah, people got a chance to know me. I had an opportunity to have the world get to know my voice, do my yoga classes. And it was astounding to me. I didn't see anything wrong with this at that time. No red flags, nothing. I was just like, yay. And then I had a little bit of a life change right in, I would say, the early aughts. And as I was transitioning at that time, I started to realize that my location was something I wanted to keep private. And so I realized that I had to shift the way that I behaved when communicating with my audience. And I was still doing the yoga podcast at that time. And so I had to really come to terms with the level of transparency that I had with my audience before, and be and kind of put a break on my location, where I was, what I was doing. I was always really open. Hey, I'm going to be on this street at this time at 11 o'clock. Come see me, you know, and
hey, stalker, here's where to find me.
Yeah, I literally did that. And I didn't see that. And then when my life was upended, I recognized, holy crap, I've literally put a beacon on myself. And I've been doing it without even, like, somebody could really look at the words I'm saying, the videos I'm putting out, and if they needed to find me. So that was so to your point there, I think that we do get so many wonderful things being a creator and being transparent and being accessible and being on and sharing ourselves. I think there's so much wonderfulness that happens. Intimacy with audience, right? Yeah. Through the digital spins. I think it's so beautiful. And yet now there's a whole other level after I've been around this now for over a decade. I would no longer do what I did because I value my privacy way too much. I don't want you to know. I only want you to see what I want you to see.
Look at me, but don't look at my butt.
Yes. It actually is this, like, there's times when I'm sitting back here and going like, okay, am I okay with what's behind me? Because people have commented very specifically where they'll send me a message and go like, where did you get that little? And I'm like, oh my God, how did you even read that I have that back there? And so it made me kind of concerned, not to say that I'm embarrassed of anything, but I just was like, I don't want you to know that much.
Yeah. I mean, it really calls for a level of consciousness about what we're putting out there that when we were growing up, we didn't really have to think about because the technology wasn't there and we weren't always in front of cameras and in front of microphones and things like that. But as those of us that are creators, we have to think about this. There was that situation with the a podcaster, live streamer in the Seattle area who was murdered a few weeks ago.
Yes, correct. We talked about,
her information, even if she was trying to keep some modicum of secrecy about where she lived, the guy found her. So that's another thing we need to think about, is sometimes it's the little clues that can add up. You just really have to be careful, and maybe better too safe than sorry.
Oh yeah, 100%, because we're just regular old people. And that one fella, just to throw a fine point on how intense that can be as a conversation, what you're both saying about location. Mm-hmm. I think we can all agree that Elon Musk has the resource for anything he could want security wise. Because the man's got all the money and all the technology. Yet that kid, relatively young person, found a way to track his movements via his plane. And to me, that struck a very, obviously, it struck an interesting time in his public presence, which I'm sure made him very uneasy, because that happened about the same time. But it does definitely draw a point that as regular folk, as people that aren't billionaires, we need to be extra careful.
Yeah, and that's a situation where the government is collecting this data. There's a mandate that the planes, when they're traveling, they, you know, the flight plans have to be made, and the beacons have to go, and the GPS tracking and all that. And if it's public information, I mean, if it's government collected, most of it's public information. That's how this guy was able to do it. So it's not just what we put out there voluntarily, but sometimes what we're required to, or we may not even realize that there's trackers and things. I'm sure Musk didn't think about it until this happened.
Apparently. So I think, again, just kind of draws to that. I want to shift gears a little bit into the concept of how long this stuff sticks with us. So we've talked about it both in the context of us as adults and how long words stick with us, because adults are generally held to a higher responsibility and of behavior, of actions, of words that we say. And we've seen that with a lot of people who get quote unquote canceled, you know, something is unveiled about their past, unless they're running for president, in which case it won't matter. But in other cases, those people are then pulled out of the public stream of approval in most cases. And in some of those cases, I think we would agree that it's probably good, and also is true in some of those cases. It was 10, 15 years ago. So when we think about adults first, and then we'll slide, I think, into the younger folks conversation. But again, I want to start where we understand, which is our own universe directly. Is there a statute of limitations on F-ups, I guess is what I say. And I know, Elsie, this one, we've touched on this for people in your world, too, before, where some of their actions have followed them into realms where they were probably way overblown and unnecessary. Do you think from a social, cultural, ethical standpoint, there should be lines that we establish as a group, even if it was just us as a group, where we should no longer care about that historical record?
Right. You know, what's interesting is that I had a conversation very close to the one that we're having right now for my other show, which is She Podcasts. And we kind of talked about an article or an issue that came up with one of the actors on Beef, who had some things that he said on his podcast that were incredibly problematic. And that is using a very kind way to refer to the dialogue that he put out on that podcast. And so our, instead of kind of focusing on the vilification of his words, you know, this happened in 2014 in this conversation, Jess and I were talking about it and said, like, when is it, right? When is it, like, do we have to hold them to the fire the whole time? Like, it was, you know, in 2014, and we got some feedback that I'm going to actually read to you now, which was from Julia Klein. And I think that Bree has her URL here, who really focused on she had a podcast prior that was really centering the Me Too movement, because the issue with the Beef guy had sexual assault things that he mentioned in it. And she had these really wonderful points. She said that it's not necessarily to say that people can change, but it's to ask a series of questions about whether they have changed. She said the first one is, has the harm stopped? And she said that that was hands down the number one question to ask in these situations whenever these problems arise, especially because if the harm continues in any fashion, then they're you really have to bring consequences to the perpetrator of that time, right? So I think that that's applicable to many different things. The second thing is, does the perpetrator acknowledge that their actions caused harm? And whether or not that was their intent. So that's another thing that I think we can apply holistically to almost anything that we do, right? So if we can take responsibility for that. The number three one is, does the perpetrator take responsibility? Not, I'm sorry that you're so sensitive about this thing, right? But I'm sorry that I did that. And, you know, that's it. Pure responsibility for their actions. Then they have to say, what are the actions that they've taken to change? What made you commit harm then? And how has it changed about you now? So there is that level of accountability. And there's only two more. Has something changed in their life, like overcoming addiction or getting a stable job or removing a toxic person from their life and fun, you know, whatever that has caused that change to become influent, you know, in fact, because people sometimes cause harm when they're being harmed. So we have to recognize that. Lastly, are you walking your walk? Have the perpetrator's actions, not just the words, in time since the incident taken place, demonstrated that they have in fact changed? So I think that that's a social, cultural way that we can approach those discussions versus just saying like, they'll never, you know, be a open, we will never deal with those people again. But if you really see that transformation, it's social, in a social nature, I think that it's worth it. Now, legally, to throw it over to, you know, to Gordon, I do feel that there's another layer to that conversation, because as people, we can all abide by those rules or talking points. But I think legally, there's another layer to the mix.
Well, you know, there are lots of layers and lots of, I should say, it's a question of degree.
Right.
Both the degree to which the person who has allegedly done this or said this thing has changed or recanted or apologized, and all of the above, but also the degree of the offense itself. You know, the law has statutes of limitations, different lengths of time for different kinds of crimes and different kinds of civil claims based on what the claim involves. How long are you allowed to? How long is the government allowed to continue to prosecute, or is a civil claim allowed to happen? You know, after a few years, the opportunity to sue can go away if you don't take action quickly. And sometimes there's variations on when did you learn of the problem and those kinds of things. But fundamentally, murder, there's no statute of limitations. Rape, I don't think there's a statute of limitations. Arson, no statute of limitations. But, you know, the statute of limitations on speeding is a year, you know, it's just, it depends. And as society, I think what we sometimes lose sight of is that we've decided in the law to let people off the hook after a while, presumably because the harm has ended and there's no ongoing continuing problem, and people hopefully have learned a lesson or whatever. Of course, not getting caught, you don't learn the lesson every time, but the degree matters. And the same is true of, you know, if you said something, telling an off-color joke or an inappropriate comment in a workplace or something like that, it should follow you for a while. But after a while, maybe, you know, we should be able to assume and expect that you've changed if nothing else has happened again in that interval. And what we're seeing in the culture right now is nobody's ever off the hook for anything that ever happened to them ever. And maybe the exception is, you know, if something a 7-year-old said or did something, we give them a pass because they didn't know, they couldn't have known, they should have grown up and learned. If they continue when they're 16, 17, 20, 27, you know, that's when you start to question their character. And that's often what these objections relate to, is character. And even in the law, character evidence isn't usually admissible about a witness, unless they've called it into question about they're always truthful or, you know, those kinds of things. So we have to be, I think we need to be more mindful that we change as we grow, as we age. And the real question is, have we changed, as Elsie was saying? So
Yeah, I think that that's really critical, is asking the question. It's not yeah. giving a free pass, I think, is critical, because making the assumption, I think, in fairness, is probably what we have tried to do for generations and done it extraordinarily ineffectively. So
and character also is relevant in different contexts in different yeah. ways. You know, if somebody is running to be the leader of the nation, their character is important in different ways than if they're mm-hmm. looking to apply for a job or go to college at, you know, at the local community college or a job.
And that they wouldn't have got the job if they had either of the records of the last two, probably.
No,
because they would have been weeded out.
That depends on whether the employer considers it a significant factor. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're being hired as a mechanic, the employer probably doesn't, I mean, they may care, but they may not be as concerned that, yeah, you got a drunk driving arrest when you were 19 or something like that. But if you're
on
the Supreme Court of the United States, it matters.
Yeah, I think that small businesses should care. And I always encourage people to engage with those things, because I think addressing them early as a small business allows you to get in touch with your mm-hmm. people, because like you said, people do change, but small business has a way higher liability in terms yeah. of screwing up, because they don't have the same firepower in this sense as like yeah. a big corporation would be to fight allegations of a certain type. So yeah. it's definitely a little bit different as you get to, even as a solopreneur, you can imagine hiring a subcontractor and having all sorts of things go haywire from that. So there's I think a lot of back and forth. Shifting now to a little bit of the kids, because I think we also agreed coming into this is mm-hmm. there is something different about adulthood, and age-wise, we might have a discussion of whether it should be 18 or something different. But as minors, the law, I would think, protects people in a different way, or should protect people in a different way. But I could be totally off on that, because you know, we've talked about it, but it seems like the businesses and the industry has maybe done a more intentional job regulating it than some of the laws have. But how far off is that?
I think that's a giant assumption that the industry has done anything that they haven't been forced to do to,
agreed. To protect kids. Agreed.
The law says that, you know, you can't, well, the law has established some rules that the industry has adopted, that 13 is the age at which you can have an account on Facebook or Twitter or TikTok or whatever. But, you know, we look, 13-year-old's judgment is not the same as an adult's judgment. This is a known fact. And so the laws generally deal with what personal information can these services collect? Name, address, birth date. You know, those kinds of things. Again, a lot of it has to do with your whereabouts being inadvertently revealed. But the fact is, when that kid goes on TikTok and posts a video of them, you know, in front of their school, and the name of the school is on the wall behind them, it's out there. The company didn't collect it. The kid voluntarily posted that information. And so there's a component here that isn't about the law. It's about just good judgment. And when does good judgment begin?
Yeah, I don't think that business is, at least at this time. I think Meta, I don't know, I just saw some news come up that Ireland or in England, they're being forced to like do something in terms of kids, like they can no longer advertise to kids or something, and they're fighting back. And then I literally just saw something that now on Roblox, which I didn't know about, they've gotten approval or something about the fact that now they're going to be doing immersive advertising within the platform. Wow. And I was like, what does that mean? And it seems like, I mean, I literally just scanned. So please do not quote me on this. I scanned this article because it said Roblox, and my kid loves Roblox. Like that's like, she loves to play Roblox. So I was like, what is this? Right. And I guess it's like, cause Roblox is a series of little games within another larger app. Right. So there's these tiny little things. It seems like some of those could actually be a full on ad. So it would be, they would tap on it and be immersed in ad. And I don't know, obviously I'm assuming that it's age appropriate, but even then it's, whoa, right? They're being immersed in an advertisement. That's
yeah. Do we want our kids playing a game where they go around collecting the French fries so they can win an ice cream cone or something like that? And it turns out that that's McDonald's or whoever, you know, putting that in front of them with colors and logos and designs and stuff mm-hmm. that trains them to respond a certain way, you know, for the dog sure. to salivate when they hear the bell, right?
Yeah. And it's like in their little brains. I mean, I know for her, she was very true. Like there was a point there where we had a special 15-minute point where she had to get on this one game streak. So she had, like, we've made a deal. She could get in and she would go into the thing and play for 15 minutes so she could keep her streak. And it was like something she was really very much like she paid attention to it. Mom, can I have my 15 minutes? Mom, can I have? So to go in there just to really quickly keep her streak up. And I think like, wow, I wish you did that about like all the other things in your life. But, you know, but I can see how important some of those triggers are for a young brain to really, I mean, we get sort of manipulated by things like that. I'm hoping to not like do that because I do see the positive on those external streaks, if you will, or like rewards that are good for like fitness and things like that. I see that. But there's also obviously the harmful aspect of it. And I would not want my kid to, like, I don't want a machine to find out the things that she really loves and manipulate her loves for her. I think that is a privacy thing for me. I don't want that. I don't want somebody to go like, oh, they really love to play, you know, this type of a game. Yeah. Let's like get into the thing that really gives her joy and get her to take action on stuff. It's like, that's creepy to me.
Yeah. Does it change if there's not advertisements in that same circumstance? Or does it still feel too much?
Well, what do they need the data for if they're not going to run ads? If they're not, I mean, you know, the money motivation is the reason that they're collecting this stuff. If they don't have a way of making money from it, they won't bother.
Yeah. And so, I know that I've spent a lot of money already, Trevor. Let's just put it this way. When she wants to, because there's money exchanged, not real money, but she's like, I want, there's Robux. I always say that the wrong word, Robux. So in order to buy things, obviously you play for things and you get stuff. But if you if you don't have enough time to play or you want that special thing, you have to buy it or exchange it with another player. Mm-hmm. And so she really only wants Robux for her birthday. She doesn't want physical things. She wants that. And I just sit there and go, well, okay. So she, you know, she loves to play those games. And there's also, I think, in terms of the privacy aspects for setting up her account and doing all of these things, I actually was very impressed by the level of blocks that are set up for Roblox. They know that they're young kids on this platform. And so there is a lot, there's actually a lot. I was kind of like, really? You want me to do that? I mean, it's like, it really incorporates the parent. They can't do anything. They can't change there's a lot of security things that are set up. So they can't pretend to be another person. They can't change their birthday. They have to have approval. There's like so many things.
A lot of that is new, and that's response to some problems that they've had in the past few years. So I'm glad to hear that that to a parent, it feels like it's more secure and safe than it used to be, because I've heard the contrary about Roblox.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I was afraid of, too. But when she was asking me to do stuff, I was like, what? Because there's also no way to talk. Like, I go, why can't you, you know, give them your email address? Or like, you can't do that. Like at all. You can't say where you're from. You can't write numbers. You can't write email. It literally blocks it out. You can't do it. You physically cannot.
Yeah.
So
we should bring this back to and circle back to the content creation end of things a bit and talk about what we as content creators are putting out to the world, I think, because one of the big challenges is we want to be seen. It's that look at me, don't look at my butt thing I was joking about earlier. We want to be seen, and we need to be, you know, thoughtful about how we do that. There's value in being seen, but you know, we have to then be okay with sometimes the things that we don't want seen also showing. I don't know, how do you guys feel about all that?
I don't like it. I mean, I am I have a sense of being a little bit more private, even in so many different ways. Like I knew where to put things away. Like I didn't want people looking through my things. Like it was, it's always been a very, I've always been incredibly private. And I think that it's challenging for me to navigate that. Just like actually what Trevor was talking about, especially as an online business or even somebody who's really building their personal brand. How do you navigate that transparency and accessibility and, oh, she's just like me without showing too much? Like there's times when I'll take a video in my house and I'm like talking like just very down to earth. And then I never post those videos because I don't like the way you could see my house. And I feel very private about that. I want to show you my little areas that I want you to see like this. This is good.
Yeah.
But I don't want to take you on a tour of my home.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, So we as savvy, smart, experienced content creators know this, and we have a set or we have an environment where we think about what's behind us, what's in front of the camera and those kinds of things. I think that's the area that we need to, educate the young people who are coming into the space about. Maybe they're already savvy to it. I don't know. But, you know, you do see kids posting Instagram videos or TikTok videos where they're revealing, like I said, the front of the school or the neighborhood they live in or something like that. It can be troublesome.
Yeah, dating apps, aren't there a variety of app ads that just tell people where you are in town as a thing? Like it's part of what they do? Like I think Telescope was an example at one point during COVID that people were all interested in. I downloaded it long enough to see what it was, but I don't do a lot of social media. But aren't there? I mean, that is, like we said, with the cell phone, it's an immediate beacon. Yeah. So knowing whether that beacon is turned on is absolutely freaking critical.
Well,
because apps are built to do that because they want to give you better recommendations. But then literally knowing where you are, even if you do all the things to protect your content, is something I think about because it's something I've been educated on about from my wife. The privacy that's important for that women in particular feel versus someone like me that think about it more often. So the physical location is something I had to adjust to and I have a different appreciation for, but it's definitely an evolving appreciation.
Well, this is where the law really gets in conflict with sort of everyday practice and how we like to live our lives, right? The law says that these companies have to disclose. We're gathering this information and get your consent to take this info and use it the way we use it and so on. And so the way the companies do that is they present you this long document that mostly they know you're not going to read. And then you check a box or you press I accept and off you go. And they're collecting that information about where you are. The beacon is active and all of that kind of stuff. I'm going to ask you guys, how often do you read those terms of service? And wouldn't you get, go ahead, answer the question. How often do you actually read them?
I don't read them, but I say no to all the things. So as many times, yes, there's the acceptance of maybe like some of the stuff that's online, but I don't let my phone have access to the location or my contacts ever, right? Yeah. Or even notifications for that matter. I don't want that. So those things are a no for me, but I don't think that that's something that's the norm for a lot of people to say no.
And you sacrifice some usability and functionality by
absolutely
doing that. And what a lot of these apps, what a lot of these services don't do is make it granular. It's, do you want to use our tool? You got to click yes. And it's not asking you, can we share your location? Can we share your age? Can we share, and frankly, if they popped up 12 questions in front of you with a checkbox for each one, it would be annoying and we wouldn't use it for that reason. So the usability versus the legal, they're technically complying with the law by getting that consent.
It's like tax law. It just needs to be more simple so people can get it. Like yeah. there's something I do think there's something to be said for the complexities of being able to understand that. Cause you know, we've talked about how it's mm-hmm. going to be even more for kids. So even once we've got the privacy statement understood for our own individual yeah. adult selves, now we have dependents that we're responsible for figuring out how they apply to them. And it's way too complex to possibly know how a lot of times how you fit in.
It's uninformed consent in many mm-hmm. instances. That's problematic. I don't know how we address that other than teaching kids that, no, you really have to pay attention to this stuff.
I mean, even the cases we've talked about today, I think are going to be really interesting to see how they evolve. Like the Tom Brady case is one I'm really interested about. The Eagles case is one I'm really interested about because the Brady case makes sense to me because he's hyper protective. The Eagles case to me seems like a representative case where it's so like the Eagles weren't
on the Eagles conversation.
Right. And that's why I wanted to pull it in quick because it is something that's in the news and we'll follow their lead because those are creators at the highest level in some ways. Mm-hmm. So how the courts decide to look at their big dollar cases will definitely have an impact on us as regular everyday creators.
So just factually for the audience, so they know what we're talking about. It's not specific to the Eagles, although they're the music group in question. Some YouTube creators had some video strikes against them, videos taken down because they were doing reaction videos. And reaction videos are generally viewed, at least in the YouTube community, as okay following the fair use defense in the copyright law. I have my questions about whether it actually would pass muster if it went to court, but in this instance, a couple of their videos were Eagles songs that they were reacting to, and they were taken down, and they were sort of wondering, what do we do about it? And it raises interesting questions. At what point does, this is copyright law. The Eagles want to control how their songs are used, and we come into conflict with, you know, other creators wanting to create stuff that's transformative in things. We're waiting for a big ruling from the Supreme Court on transformativeness in the photograph to art world, dealing with the Andy Warhol image of Prince. It was based on a photo. We'll know more then, but right now it's there's all kinds of fun stuff going on.
No doubt. So I want to start to shift us a little bit towards as we get to the last 15. We'll make sure we have a few minutes at the end, of course, to kind of get some wrap-up thoughts on things and check in. I did want to take a second and recognize that it is episode 12, which is awesome. Next week is episode 13. We've had a lot of really amazing discussions. We've had some really good guests along the way. And I think that sets us up for so many really, really exciting discussions moving forward. And it also brings up something that is common to us that I would like to pose to lead into what we're doing, which is wrapping as we get towards the end. I want to give each of you a chance to share some thoughts around forgiveness and redemption. That's a topic that we had in our notes, but the concept of forgiveness and redemption as it relates to the privacy wall. And I guess twofold, do we think, just a plain yes or no, that kids under 18, that there is a cutoff of if they do some wild indiscretion that we should leave it in the past so that when they hit 18 or when they get to adulthood, that shouldn't follow them? Is there a black and white space there? I guess would be my first question, because I think that's part of forgiveness and it's easier to look at kids for that if we start there. And then also when we talk about kids and ourselves, it's the concept of digital literacy and making sure that we are providing those tools to people. That's something we always come back to by the end of the show, is digital literacy is so, so important. And I wanted to kind of lean into that once again to emphasize that no matter where we go with these discussions, informing yourself and asking questions to somebody who's qualified, like a Gordon, like an Elsie who has experience, is really, really important. Find a lawyer, find a person who's done the thing you're looking to do. If you're a newer creator, don't pretend like you're going to get it all right. You're probably not. Lean into somebody who's got some experience when you're building your business, because these types of image and privacy issues are going to become more deeply impactful as we understand them better. So if you as a brand or a small business or a podcaster are not falling within those guidelines, it is absolutely going to catch up to all of us, because we won't have the money to fight those cases that are going to get brought if there's you know, those, we just don't have the same resources. So I think it's incumbent upon us to be informed. And that's kind of where my final thoughts rest. I want to pop it, Gordon, to you and then over to Elsie as we kind of close out here in the last, I know we have a little time, but I want to give this enough flexibility to really dig into the yes or no on that. And then digital literacy wise, how are we setting ourselves and our peers up for a better version of this?
So yes, I think there should be a line, a point in time. I don't think that it's specific to a particular age. I think the degrees that I was talking about earlier come into play. And there are some things that 18-year-olds say and do that we should forgive. And there are some things that 14-year-olds say and do that we shouldn't forgive. So we have, well, I shouldn't say forgive. We should always forgive. But forgiveness is not the same as excusing something. And there are going to be consequences. And I guess part of growing up and learning is that understanding that there are consequences. Some of them will follow you for a very, very long time. And, you know, I'm willing to give a very young child a break that I wouldn't give a 15-year-old.
Okay.
Yep. I think that there needs to be a protocol set for age. As in the same way that Gordon was saying, there are degrees, but I do feel that there is an element of if the little human is below a certain age, it sort of triggers these type of check marks to be able to delineate in the same way that we were talking about before, asking certain questions, because sometimes that behavior could be influenced by, you know, something happening. Maybe there's somebody in their life that is abusing them in some way. There is coercive control. There are trauma responses. There is like just something going on. Maybe they're not neurotypical. Maybe they've got some mental health challenges that they're going through at that time. Something that is causing, there's that X factor, right, for behavior. So that we need to look at the holistic response of somebody to be able to really understand why, especially for a kid, why that behavior is happening at that time. And again, it's not necessarily as an excuse, as in like you get a pass because you have XYZ happening. It's more about being able to really put the context around it, have the appropriate, whatever needs to happen to show that, you know, consequences are coming your way, but it's reflective of the totality of the human, particularly of the younger humans that we have out there. I think that we're in a position now that we need to be addressing it deeper.
Yeah. And the law does have ways of addressing this scope of degrees and things like that. I mean, you know, you have, in some situations, the law asks, were you capable of knowing that what you were going to do is wrong? And were you capable of governing your own behavior? And that question is a question of capacity and sanity, really. Mm-hmm. And the same thing, you if you use that test on a 5-year-old, they're all going to look like they're insane. But that's the point, is not capable of making those judgments in the way that we as a society expect. And so rather than punish, we educate or we divert. And I guess that's sort of where we're talking about. We need to be, in the culture, we need to be more open to those ideas that not everybody is capable of controlling their behavior at every age.
Yeah, no doubt. Representation matters. We talked about that last week and it was awesome. So I'm excited to see how that can continue to help in the industries that are emerging, because emerging industries are new, which means that we get to have new faces and make new rules and do it however we want, because it didn't exist before. And so I'm excited to see, you know, we had Teresa on last week and I just can't stop thinking about how awesome and how much firepower she brought to that discussion. When you talk about leadership and we talk about how we protect kids, how we protect creators, leadership is just so paramount to that. And leadership takes saying hard stuff in hard places and continuing on discussions, which is something, you know, mission wise that I think continues to drive us here at Fuzzy Logic, hopefully, which is to keep conversations going that we think are going in other places, and sometimes to start conversations in a different way that maybe we haven't talked about before. As we continue to get towards things, I wanted to bring up a few titles from our past and get your hot takes on thoughts and progress since then, because I think I'm curious what your faces look like when I tell you the titles of our first couple episodes again, because sometimes I forget them. It seems like it was just a moment ago, but it was really so long ago. And I think I want to draw some point to it because of the importance of the discussions. So we were involved in them, but we didn't necessarily start them. And I think our involvement is important. The first episode we did together was called AI and the Creator Industry, Benefits and Drawbacks and the Importance of Dialogue. That was episode one.
What a difference 3 months makes.
Oh my God. No. We can do it again. We could just put them on repeat. We'll right. just have the same titles and just do a second season of the same topics. And I promise you, we will either be going around the same hamster wheel, like we'll say it again, or else it's going to be like, oh my God.
Did you see it's that? Already shifted. Think of, this was in February, late February, early March, I think, that we launched that. Think about what we know now since early March going into June. It's wild. So I thought that was kind of fun. The next one was deep fake technology, exploring misrepresentation. That was our second topic. That was before people were even imitating Donald Trump getting arrested.
Yeah.
Like that was pre, but then we saw it happen. It was so interesting how they just keep getting deeper. We have content transparency, the role of disclosures. That was a really fun conversation that's also set a foundation for a lot of what we've talked about since then. Creating ethical and responsible podcast content. We have hit on some really amazing topics over the past 11 and a half weeks. Stealing others' content, reuses, remixes. That was Hobby to Hustle, inclusion, accountability, and ethics in the tech industry. These are discussions that in my heart of heart make me so, so proud to get to work with you all and really make it a very cool conversation to be a part of. And leadership is something I talk about very frequently in all of my shows, but I also recognize it's not something that I bring up as a fine point here. But as we kind of get into the last week of Fuzzy going into next Friday, which will be at least a break in our season, I think we've agreed. 13 will be a break point. And it's going to be called Creating with Intention. It's going to be a really, really cool, detailed episode because that word intention, even today, got brought up a few times, which I think is great. But I want to toss it to each of you to talk about what's going on in the next few weeks. Elsie, I know you have a litany of things, a huge docket going on this summer. So I want to set up to tee it up. And
a
then,
huge docket.
And, yeah, well, I know you're a busy human being. And then also just, you know, any parting thoughts that you have on how it's gone so far for you as part of this team, is this discussion, and things you're excited to wrap us up with next week. We have a little time to work with, so I'll toss it to you, Elsie.
Oh, goodness. So, so June coming up is She Podcast Live. So if you have not gotten your ticket or if you want to support the organization at all, the conference at all, please buy a ticket. And if you buy a ticket, email the team over at our info@shepodcast.com in case you want to donate that ticket, or if you're not going to be attending, that's fine. Just buy a ticket. Please be supportive of us and especially the team working so very hard to make this something for the podcasting industry as a whole, in addition to being able to do things in a different way. Like Trevor was just mentioning in terms of new and innovation and emerging. Other than that, I am doing live events every month over on the Libsyn YouTube channel. Head over to youtube.com/@Libsyn. I'm going to be doing a live event actually next week, I believe, which is with Doc Rock from the Ecamm team. And we're going to be talking everything to do with video podcasting hardware and software. So we're going to geek out on all of those wonderful things. After that, we're going to be over at Podcast Movement. I'll be at Podcast Movement there if you want to touch base with me over in Denver, Colorado in August. And after that, I don't know what. Oh, the Latino Podcast Listener Report is going to be happening as well in July, which I am a part of. And stay tuned for a couple of other projects that I'm working on as well to just kind of pay attention to. So that is all I have going on.
No big deal. Thank you.
I feel so inadequate now. Things are kind of slowing down and quieting down for me a little bit right now. I will be in, I'm on jury duty next week, believe it or not. So I don't know.
Oh my gosh.
The lawyer is doing jury duty. Go figure. Anyway, in early June, I'll be doing my workshop, Business and Legal Fundamentals for Podcast Growth and Profit. That'll be coming up June 5th, I think, is the date. And keep your eyes peeled for that. And you can find me on my weekly live stream / podcast, Legit Podcast Pro, on most channels. Follow me on YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Twitch, you name it. I'm there doing that live on Thursdays at 4 p.m. Pacific time. And I'd love to have you come in and drop your questions. And that actually, I'm going to invite viewers, listeners to this show to let us know what topics are on your mind.
That's awesome.
And we'd love to have input, feedback, questions from you, because that helps us give you the kind of content you really want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No doubt. Yeah. I think it's going to be a great, great platform to launch into all that we're doing. We've experimented with some different engagements this year with people being in with us live, with people filling out surveys. Today, Elsie brought some analytics from her own research, which I loved, and just continuing to find ways to, like you both said, bring the creator's voice into these conversations will be absolutely important, so we can stay ahead of the curve, hopefully ahead of the conversation, or at least at the front, because not because we need to be special, but because, like, why not talk about these things that need to be talked about? If we don't think enough people are talking about them, let's talk about that, because other topics that are more covered, I don't think we necessarily need to hit on. Like, there's a million how-to podcasts in the world, and I love coming to this one to talk about legal issues, about social and cultural issues, which has gotten so deep in our world. And then, of course, the ethical issues, which I think is just the bell of the ball when we get to talk. I so appreciate both of you being here, Elsie Escobar and Gordon Firemark. We will be back next Friday with our final, at least, of this little break. We'll have more to come, but it's going to be a good one. If you want to create without getting in as much trouble, hopefully, start with intention.
Oh my goodness.
Start with a low bar and put some intention behind your content. And we're going to give you some thoughts and some perspective, as always, from our viewpoint next week here on Fuzzy Logic. We are so thankful that you've tuned in today. And we're also so thankful to you, Bree, in the background. Any gratitude to go around as we get to the winky to wrap?
Thank you all gratitude? For showing up.
And I'm just going to say, we've got a question on the screen. I'm going to answer that inside the Numispect Creator Lab. So if you're not a member of that, join Numispect Creator Lab.
Thank you.
And I'll give Amy her answer in there. I know she's a member, so that'll be.
She is. Oh, and Bree, right on cue. Thank you all so much.
Thanks, everybody. See you next week.
Have a great weekend.
Bye.
And that's it for this week's episode of Fuzzy Logic. We hope you found the discussion insightful and informative as we explore the critical issues facing creators today. Remember, this is just the beginning of the conversation, and we want to hear from you. Leave a comment below with your thoughts and questions, or head over to fuzzylogic.com to leave us a voice message. We may feature your comments and questions in a future episode. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Fuzzy Logic.